Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's going down?
Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of What's Going Down here on Patreon, ad-free or on the main feed where you have to deal with a couple of ads. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Mr. Finlay Martin. Finn, how are you doing today?
Kenny, I'm doing all right. We started today in Lancaster with snow. We've now got rain.
Right.
But when you're listening to Finn and Kenny, it's all sunshine.
There you go. I can even see the sun through the clouds here. I can just about see it. So, you know, it's not all doom and gloom.
No, forget the doom loop. We don't bring you that unless we're talking about the Young Bucks.
Well, it's funny,
even then, we try and make light of it.
We do. Well, you know, since you brought the Young Bucks, let's just dive in. I did want to ask you. I've not seen it, but I've seen like a 30-second clip of it. But there was a lot of wrestling over the weekend. There was SmackDown, and there was, the TNA pay-per-view, Hard to Kill. There was the Battle at the Valley, New Japan show. Loads of stuff going on. But at the New Japan Strong Battle of the Valley show, Jack Perry turned up with a bushy beard and he ripped up his AEW contract and he looked into the camera and said, "Are you too busy on Twitter to take my phone calls?" Which we assume is to Tony Khan. So I guess my question is going to be,
hold on, Kenny. It might have been to you. He might be angling for a tour.
He can get fucked. What's he going to say of any use? Wait, tell me when your love affair with the Young Bucks first started. I know that you said months ago, and I kind of echoed what you said, that, you know, if CM Punk was fired, he should have probably been fired because he was the catalyst to all this situation, and I don't think you can really excuse the fact. I've seen some people excuse, you know, well, he's younger and whatever. You know, he's an adult, so, you know, adult behavior should have adult consequences. But if they were keeping him, AEW,
yes,
do you think this thing of kind of having him appear in New Japan and rip up the contract and do something like that, is that a better way to reintroduce him than to just have him turn up on Dynamite where he might get a bad reaction?
I mean, it depends where it goes. I mean, if this is the start of something interesting, I mean, I'm not really holding much hope out on that one, but, you know, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. If this is the start of an interesting storyline, then absolutely this would be better than what most assumed he was going to do, which was return to Dynamite or Collision and save, you know, Luchasaurus from Christian Cage, which seemed to be the, you know, most likely outcome of all this, or the most likely direction of all this. So, I mean, it depends what happens next, doesn't it? Lots of people were talking about it. We're talking about it now. So, yeah, let's give it a chance. Let's give it a chance to develop. And maybe it will, maybe it won't. I don't know. I mean, no one really believes that that was his real contract and he really has torn it up. And, you know, he's basically symbolically quitting AEW, isn't it? If you tear your contract up, right? That was the message he was sending. But it's like, well, we know he hasn't quit AEW. You know, there's no way any of us could be that fortunate. There's no way AEW could be that lucky. So let's just see where it goes, Kenny. What do you make of it all?
I think that the compliment I'll give it is that I was dreading him turning back up because I thought he was going to irritate me. But I think the couple of things that have made that more bearable are CM Punk showed up in WWE, and that's interesting. So there's no longer this kind of anger about, you know, well, you know, CM Punk's not getting to do his thing and Jack Perry is. So that's helped in one regard. But the other one is, like, you know, he's turned up in New Japan. It's something different. So if this does morph into something different, then good. He should 100% be a heel, though, because he is a heel. He is very unlikable. For various, you know, for various reasons, there was the famous, well, it's not famous, it's famous to us because we covered it, but, you know, you covered that thing in the mag about when he did the for the Love Wrestling convention.
Yeah.
And he was asked about wrestling CM Punk, and this is when Punk can't return yet or anything. And you made the point that, you know, if you're a pro, you sort of work the answer so that you could set something up for the future, right?
Yeah.
And he chose not to do that. He chose to, you know, be a Young Bucks arse licker, really. And that's what he's kind of been over. So if that's what he's going to be, then just go all in on it.
Exactly. Join the Team Young Bucks. You know, appear at ringside, help them win the tag team belts so they can defend them against Sting and Darby Allin, if indeed that is the, you know, plan for Revolution on March 3rd, it is, isn't it, March 3rd?
Yes, March 3rd.
So, I mean, you're participating in this, you know, stoke the heat. You know, be a villain. Be obnoxious. We all know you are. So that's the real you. So just, you know, incorporate it into your character and, you know, do some good with this or some good for AEW's business, if that's possible. I mean, who knows? We'll see, Kenny. Let's just
By the time we record on Thursday, the Young Bucks are going to turn up on Dynamite tomorrow. And I'm hoping, because, you know, when you cover wrestling, you kind of have to go in with some hope. Otherwise, you know, it's like, why would you have watched, why would we have continued to watch WWE in the dark days of 2018, 2019, unless we had hope that...
Well, exactly. I mean, the longer you've been following this company, you know, the more resilience you have. You need resilience to be a wrestling fan, Kenny, don't you?
Yeah, 100%. You need to, you know, have hope through the dark days that the brightness will come. So, you know, if the Young Bucks go out tomorrow night on Dynamite and they do something or say something that, you know, kickstarts this Sting and Darby match at Revolution, great. You know, we would be happy to come on this podcast and go, that was good. Like, we would be happy to do it. It's not that we want it to be bad. It's just that more often than
usually,
not, it is bad.
It usually is.
Yeah, it's not our fault. You know, don't come at us for it.
Do not shoot the messenger.
Yeah, don't shoot the messenger. Do you think Finn wanted to sit for 10 years talking about shite John Cena was? No! You want John Cena to put people over so Finn could say, great job. But you know, you eventually did it. SummerSlam 2021, Money in the Bank 2021.
Yeah, absolutely. When he put Roman Reigns over at SummerSlam, I was like, well done, John Cena.
Yeah. So, anyway.
I broke a couple of keyboards writing those words, I've got to say. Go down to, you know, PC. Well, PC World doesn't exist anymore. Curry's anyway. Get some new keyboards, so I have to block it.
Wait, let's move on. We're going to do SmackDown, then just talk some Hard to Kill debuts and stuff, and then we'll talk about Raw. So SmackDown this past Friday, we opened the show with part of the Bloodline, with Jimmy Uso, Solo Sikoa, and Paul Heyman. and you know, Paul Heyman's trying to have a go at Nick Aldis about the Fatal Four Way, and then Aldis comes out and basically says, you know, the Royal Rumble match is a done deal, but you know, the Bloodline, you've been ruining all these matches on SmackDown. You can't ruin the main event because you're going to be in it. It's going to be LA Knight, Randy Orton, AJ Styles against Solo Sikoa, Jimmy Uso, and Roman Reigns. And the crowd are obviously very excited at the prospect of Roman Reigns wrestling on television. But then Heyman reminds Aldis that, you know, Roman's not there. And he says, well, you've got the whole night to find a partner. Otherwise, it'll be a 3-on-2 handicap match. And this kind of gave us a thread throughout the night of Paul Heyman trying to get various people to join the Bloodline.
Including Carlito. After one of the worst run-ins I've ever seen in my life. Carlito. I was just like, I forgot all about him. He's like, he still works here.
Yeah, I forgot. I genuinely forgotten he was back when somebody mentioned his name the other day. I did love when Heyman was speaking to Carlito, you know, he comes with an apple and then Carlito takes the apple and says no, and Heyman's like, the apple's not on offer if you don't tag with us. You know, like, We've given Heyman a bit of flack for not really delivering, but I thought on this show he was actually pretty good. But he did well here.
He was, yeah. I mean, he was very important, wasn't he, to lots of segments. And there was an interesting one there where he ran into the Street Profits and Bobby Lashley backstage and invited Bobby Lashley to team with Jimmy and Solo in the main event. And Bobby Lashley said, well, the only way I'm going to be in the ring with the Bloodline is if I'm on the opposite side of the ring to Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was a no. Bobby Lashley wasn't going to team with Solo and Jimmy against LA Knight, AJ Styles and Randy Orton in the main event. So, yeah, they showed the footage from after last week's SmackDown where Heyman had brought the news to Roman Reigns backstage that he would have to defend the belt in a fatal four-way at the Royal Rumble, and Reigns did. He's like, you know, he was there, like breathing heavily, and just that thing where, you know, his top lip quivers, and then he says, "Fix this." and like, yes, my tribal chief. Well, Heyman didn't fix it, as you said, Nick Aldis. I confirmed that it was a done deal. The match was set in stone, so this fatal four-way will be going ahead. And Heyman had said, well, you know, we're not the bad guys. You know, it's Nick Aldis who's the bad guy for booking this match. And then that led to Aldis telling him that, no, this six-man match is going to take place. If you can find, obviously Roman Reigns wasn't there, if you can find another partner. They couldn't find another partner, which led us to the main event. And they got round that one by having Solo and Jimmy attack Randy Orton as he made his entrance. So in the main event, it was effectively a tag match until Randy Orton came out towards the end, right, Kenny?
Yeah, and Randy Orton came out at the end and he ended up tagging in. Heyman was fuming because he thought that obviously they'd taken care of Orton. And of course, in the end, Orton ends up, he ends up doing an RKO on Jimmy and getting the win. Yes. So the babyfaces win. And then we get a kind of fight afterwards. And in the end, AJ, LA Knight and Randy Orton do a triple powerbomb to Solo through the announce table, which is kind of like a cool, you know, bit of a nod to The Shield as well. Yes, which is,
I thought so.
So, yeah, I mean, it was good stuff. It was, I do think, you know, I saw that, I mean, we can maybe go into this on Thursday, maybe it's a bigger conversation, but I saw that Roman Reigns, you know, he's not going to be part of Elimination Chamber. He's not going to be part of Backlash. He's not part of Bash in Berlin. And it's like, you know, at this point, it's like if you're never going to be around, then you should not be the champion. So if he's kind of done being around, get this belt off of him at WrestleMania. Like,
yeah,
you know, it was fine before because he was around enough. But I mean, at this point, if you were to look at how many matches he wrestled last year and how many matches Brock Lesnar wrestled last year, I bet he's not that far off.
No, you're probably not probably right about that. It's yeah, I mean. Obviously he's going to be at the Rumble if he's not going to be Elimination Chamber. That's annoying. So one of my predictions in the, well, predictions, one of my proposals, not predictions, my proposals in the next issue has been shot down in flames. Mm-hmm. But it just sort of makes things less interesting if he's not there, doesn't it? And it's like, no, you should be there to defend the belt. And it's just like, well, if you're going to defend the belt between Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, you know, really, what is the point of you? To be honest, it's like, You're the champ. You should be there. You should be on. Okay, if it's a real B show, it doesn't really matter. But Elimination Chamber's at a stadium, you know, in Australia. You know, it's a major show, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of like because we know for a fact if he's not going to be at these big shows, like he's not going to be on TV a lot. And it's like the solo Sokoa, Paul Heyman, Jimmy Uso trio are struggling without him.
Yeah.
They are not as... This is not the bloodline of a year ago or 8 months ago, you know, so... And especially, I mean, I think if he does... If he is facing The Rock in some form at WrestleMania, which I think, you know, we probably do need to, at some point soon, prepare for, then I assume he's back a bit more. But, you know, we'll see. But yeah, the Roman thing is a bit of a problem. But elsewhere on SmackDown, we did get a segment with Pete... Sorry, that's a Freudian slip there. Butch and Tyler Bates. And basically we got a hint that we might be getting the return of Pete Dunne, right?
Yeah, I think so. Right. Yeah, they're talking about we need to show them what British Strong Style's all about. I mean, yeah, Ridge has disappeared. I mean, apparently Sheamus is going to be returning from injury. Did you read that?
Yes, he should be back soon.
Yeah, he should be. Maybe he'll return at the Rumble. It would seem... I mean, it would be a good surprise for the Rumble, wouldn't it? Because we haven't seen him for several months now. I think we've seen him since, was it September? I think it was the Edge match, wasn't it? It was last time we saw him.
Yes.
September or was that late August? It's a good while ago anyway. So, yeah, I mean, it wouldn't make much sense for Sheamus to return before the Rumble. And yeah, I mean, Butch or Pete Dunne and Tyler Bay, I think they can be stars as a team. I don't really like this, you know, this Tyler Bay character. You know, does yoga and what have you. I just don't see how that's going to appeal to a wrestling audience. You know, it's okay, it distinguishes him from other people on the roster, but I don't see that really getting him over in a big way. You know, okay, I'm sure some wrestling fans do yoga, but I mean, it doesn't really strike me as like, you know, all of them do or a large majority do. It's like, you know, are you really going to relate to your audience by you know, being the character that you are. So I'm hoping we're going to see some changes to that character, but, you know, we shall see about that.
We did also get a big match with Bianca Belair and Bayley on the show. They got quite a long time, actually. They got about 16 minutes. And then Bianca got the win here. And you've been a bit critical of Bianca at points. Did this match do anything for you?
I thought they were out there too long. I mean... The biggest thing about it was that at one point, Bayley hurled Belair out of the ring in front of the rest of Damage Control, and then Bayley distracted the referee so Damage Control could like put the boots to Belair at ringside, and none of them did. So it's just like Bayley was like, well, what's going on? You know, this is called an opportunity for you to give me an advantage by, you know, injuring or weakening Bianca Belair at ringside, and they didn't do that. And then Belair won after a spear and a KOD. So this was more about the Bayley Damage Control storyline. I mean, really, if Sasha Banks is not returning to WWE, then who's going to be? Because you can see it, can't you? Because if it's Bayley and it's Dakota and it's Sasha, then they can face Asuka, Io Sky, and Kairi, can't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think the probability is it's going to be Bianca, Bayley, and Naomi rather than Sasha. But I mean, you know, Sasha obviously is probably who they want as the number one pick. But whether she says yes or not, I don't know. But
yeah
I mean, they need to. I'm assuming. I mean, is that going to be a WrestleMania thing? Is Bayley going to turn before then, or are they going to try and keep it going longer?
I mean, you know, but we've seen Bayley as a face before. I mean, it probably will be different now because she's had these years as a heel. So as a face, I don't think it should be very different to the heel character. So it's not going to be like the bad old days of 2017, 2018. I just don't see those, you know, that period, you know, ruining things again for Bayley. She's not going to play that hugger character. It's just not going to happen, is it?
No.
So it's going to be a modern version. It's going to be like a modern version of this, a bit modern babyface version of this heel character. So, but you know, it's Belair and playing that same face that she's been playing forever, and she's not interesting anymore. You know, we've seen her do everything. She's won everything. I don't really see what there's left for Bianca Belair to do as this character. She's peaked a long time ago, let's be honest. And like if Naomi's returning as a babyface, we've seen that character as well. You know, I'd much rather see her be, you know, linked to the bloodline and be part of that act, because I mean, I think that could be interesting.
Yes.
She's returning as babyface. She was a babyface there for how long? Was it 2010? I think she came in, didn't she? In NXT, and then she left in 2022, wasn't it?
Yes. So.
So, yeah. Okay, you know, she's been gone for over 18 months, so it will be a novelty to see her in WWE again, but I think it'll very quickly become familiar because she played that face character for so long.
We will keep an eye on it. There's not really much else on SmackDown I wanted to bring up. Was there anything else that piqued your interest on the show before we move on?
I should just mention the Carmelo Hayes and Austin Theory injury was on a Spanish fly. I mean, they were having a really good match, and then it seemed like they got a little lost when they were in the vicinity of the turnbuckles. It's like they didn't really know where they were going next. And then they did this Spanish fly. I think they were both really distracted when they did the move. I've never liked that move. I think it looks so fake. And people know I don't like using the F word in connection with pro wrestling. And it's such a fake-looking move. And I really hope that one good thing comes from... I don't think either of them was seriously injured, but they were. No. Referee was concerned enough that the match was stopped, wasn't it, immediately?
Yeah, which was the right call. If you think, if you get the sense that they're injured, it should be stopped. It's not worth it, so...
Hopefully. Absolutely, yeah. It's the right decision by the ref. I was just going to say, I hope something good does come from this injury, and that is that WWE bans this move because I hate it. And often when people do it, you're really fearful for how they're going to land. And, you know, it never looked... To me, it's just one of those moves where obviously almost every move in pro wrestling requires the cooperation of your opponent to execute it. But with the Spanish fly, it's just so obvious that I just... Suspension of disbelief, Kenny's out of the window.
Yeah.
It's gone. It's disappeared. It's destroyed. So just get rid of that move. I don't want to see it again.
Well, let's move on. And I'm not a big fan of the move. So if they were to get rid of it, I would not be sad to see it go. TNA had the Hard to Kill pay-per-view this past weekend as well. A couple of things I wanted to ask you about from it were on the pre-show, they did have AJ Francis, the former Top Dollar, come out, and he appears to maybe be with the company, and Joe Hendry, our pal, came out and did a music video making fun of him failing in the NFL and failing to dive. the Cheez-It song. And then Francis did this. I mean, the chokes, the height that Joe Hendry went up for that choke slam was insane. So high. But AJ Francis, is he someone you want to see in TNA, or is he someone that you think could be of value there?
Well, I mean, I think so. I mean, I do feel sorry for him in WWE and that they had that first run, and it seemed like, you know, Swerve was still there at the time, wasn't he? And they were, I thought the Hit Row act, I liked them in NXT. I thought they were doing really well there. And I thought they could have been a good mid-level faction on the main roster.
Yeah.
And then was it B-Fab? Someone complained, didn't they? Who was it who complained?
B-Fab. I'm sure it was B-Fab. Yeah.
She complained. This was during the Vince era. And, you know, it's like, what are you doing? You shouldn't be saying those things. You're not in a position of stability yet in the company where you can get away with being critical of anything about WWE. There will be consequences, and there was. So, you know, I felt that was really bad. That it played out in the way it did, you know, but predictable because she shouldn't have done what she did. And then they received a second chance. And yeah, it just, you know, Swerve was a hugely important part of the act, as we've seen in AEW. He's doing well for himself there now.
Yeah.
And without Swerve, I remember you saying this on a podcast, without Swerve, it's sort of like that was like 70% of their appeal, wasn't it? He was like the engine. Just drove that faction, and the rest of them were pretty much passengers. You know, he was the one who was very much in the driving seat when it came to Hit Row. So, you know, I felt like they could have done all right, but they didn't. And it seemed like when they returned under Triple H, he lost interest pretty quickly. There was the famous incident in the match that Michael Cole kept bringing up, the dive. And after that, they were just kind of a bit of a laughing stock. So I hope he can do something in TNA. TNA now, not Impact, TNA. So I think this is a good role for him to prove that he has something to offer pro wrestling, because he hasn't really shown us a whole lot apart from what he did in NXT, which I thought was decent, but that never translated to the main roster for the reasons that I've just mentioned. So yeah, I'm wishing luck there. I mean, I think I'm glad he's persevering. I think he does have a talent, and hopefully he can show it, for over and maintain some level of momentum in TNA. It's a smaller company, so he should do better there than he did do in WWE.
We also had, I mean, just to say for my own happiness, they finally took the digital media title off of Tommy Dreamer, who has no business being a pro wrestler on a mainstream TV show anymore. I
I
mean,
mean, I see the hair.
like, what does he offer? Who tunes in to see Tommy Dreamer?
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.
I mean, he was just this annoyance back in ECW, back in the day. So it's just like, yeah,
I mean, you look at someone like Dustin. So you look at someone like Dustin Rhodes, right? And he was on. I was watching Collision the other day to cover AEW Sondra, and he beat Willie Mack in this match, and then he was basically did a segment with Christian Cage, and he's going to face him on Dynamite tomorrow for the TNT title. And you look at Dustin Rhodes, and you go, I see why he's. I see why they've got him. I see why, like he works hard to keep himself in shape. You know, when he's out there, he tries his best to sort of, not. He tries to kind of gain his spot when he's out there. And it's like Tommy Dreamer. I mean, I know he's lost weight now, because they did say on the pay-per-view that he's lost 40 pounds since November. But they need to lose another 230 pounds, and that's the rest of Tommy Dreamer. Lose him.
That's it. That's the exit. Goodbye. Yeah,
It
I mean,
is. It
just,
is.
I mean, Dreamer's about my age, maybe about a year younger. And it's just like, you've had your run, you've had your time now. Just work backstage and let these other people have a go. It's their time now. And, your career has been extended far longer than it really should have been. So I think that needs to be it for Tommy Dreamer in front of the camera.
We did get the debut of the former Dana Brooke, and now known as Ash by Elegance, and she's now in TNA, and she's kind of dressed like an old movie star, kind of like a Toni Storm type thing, and she's there. Thoughts? That's all I've got.
I thought I've got to say, I thought Dana Brooke, she was somebody who did really well in NXT towards the end there. I thought she was a valuable part of the roster, and she was working with, the younger women there. And I thought she did have some good matches. And she really did seem very determined to improve. And I think she probably does have something to offer TNA in this role. I mean, people know who she is. She wasn't like Becky Lynch or Rhea Ripley, but people know who she is because she worked for WWE for a very long time. And I think she's somebody who has improved a lot from, 2 years ago. And again, yeah, if she's there to work and there to contribute and there to prove something, like the former top dollar, hopefully he is, then yeah, she can be a valuable part of the crew, valuable part of the team. So I wish her luck as well. I think she really did impress me towards the end. I mean, I wasn't really a fan of hers for a very long time, but towards the end there in NXT, you could tell that She really wanted to be there. She wasn't there. She didn't feel like, you know, it was a demotion, even though it obviously was. And she was taking it as an opportunity to show what she could bring to the table rather than being resentful because she wasn't on the main roster anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, hopefully she does well. She's, you know, she's in a smaller pond, so hopefully that'll help her. She's clearly got a character that she's going to have, so we'll see. I also, you know, thought props to Trinity for dropping the belt to Jordynne Grace.
Yeah.
You know,
we expected that one. Everyone pretty much knew that that was going to be the outcome of their match, and that was the right outcome there. Jordynne Grace to become champ, especially if Trinity Naomi is returning to WWE as we expect later this month at Royal Rumble. So it's actually only a week on Saturday, isn't it, Royal Rumble?
Yeah.
So, good for her for doing that. And, you know, one thing I actually should mention before we get to the main event, Nick Nemeth, I thought the production looked a lot better. They did say they were going to be investing more money in the product and, you know, the lighting and the, you know, big screens and everything. And I thought it looked like a much more professional operation than it had done previously. And things like that really do matter, you know, to lapse fans or floating fans or whatever you want to call them, people who don't ordinarily watch TNA. If they feel like it's a, you know, bigger, not big budget, but bigger budget company, I think they're more likely to stick with it.
Yeah. And I think I think it bodes well for them, the fact that they sold the most tickets. They didn't sell like 10,000 tickets, but they sold more tickets to this than they have for anything in a while. Like one of their highest gates they've had in like a decade almost, or a long time anyway. So yeah, good for them. Hopefully it continues. So the main event was Moose winning the TNA World title from Alex Shelley. And then of course, afterwards, Nick Nemeth turns up and is across from Moose and he super kicks him and clotheslines him and he ends up ripping off his shirt to have a TNA shirt underneath. So he is the big signing they were talking about. So the crowd seemed to be pretty into him.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, yeah, hit like the, you know, the zigzag or whatever they're going to call it there. They'll have to come up with a new name for it. But he's, you know, he was there wearing a Motley Crue t-shirt and I'm just like, you know what, Nick, this is the act, this is the character that you've been playing forever and people were bored with it in WWE. And yeah, there's going to be the novelty value of you being, you know, a new face in this company with new opponents. But like, if ever there was a guy who needed to change characters and just do something different in terms of his character, Nick Nemeth was the top of the list. He was the guy who should have made a change and done something different, changed his hair, started wearing a suit. I don't care what he did, as long as it was something different to what he was doing and had been doing for years. So, but you're right, yeah, the audience were really pleased to see him and they ripped off the Motley Crue t-shirt in the crowd. He seemed to be having a little trouble doing that and he was wearing the TNA wrestling t-shirt underneath and fans were chanting TNA and, you know, I thought it was really well done, actually. I mean, Moose has got himself in amazing physical shape. I think it made sense for him to become champion here. I mean, Alex Shelley had a good run, but it was, to me, time for Moose to be champ again. And I think Moose versus Nick Nemeth, I think that can be a really good program. You know, hopefully Nick will bring something new to his promos. I imagine he will because they won't be scripted for him. He'll come up with them in TNA. So, yeah, I actually am looking forward to Impact this week to see or to witness or to listen to what he has to say.
Yeah, and they're going to have Okada on the tapings as well. So, you know, they're making moves. And, you know, I mean, I said to Sandra yesterday on Patreon, I'll say it here. Yesterday I had quite a taxing mental day with some family stuff and I came home and I thought, right, you know what, I'm podcasting with Sandra tonight. I've watched Dynamite. I'll watch Collision. And it was the most useless 2 hours I've spent in recent memory. An absolutely pointless wrestling show.
Isn't it? So that often happens with Collision.
Well, it's like Wrestling Challenge. It's a big name against a name who you don't believe is going to win. And it's commentary trying to spend the whole match trying to make us believe that JD Drake's finally going to beat Hangman Page or Lee Moriarty is going to beat Adam Copeland, and you sit and go, you know, it's just not very interesting. And then, you know, now if TNA do in fact do something interesting, you know, there might be some people who go, do you know what, I'll maybe DVR or tape or record Impact and I'll watch that instead of Collision. Because Collision, even if you're an AEW fan and you watch the AEW pay-per-view and you watch Dynamite, you don't really need to watch Collision ever. No.
There's no reason. You know, like last week, Dynamite was under 800,000 viewers, wasn't it? I know it was like 7, 9, something mm-hmm. or other, but I mean, it was fewer than 800,000 viewers. And Collision, you know, I think it was last week, was like about 400,000 viewers.
I'm surprised they've got that many for that show, because on a Saturday night as well, you know, Saturday night, there's so much stuff that people want to do in America. You know, you go to the movies, go and see friends, go out to a party, whatever you want to do. I mean, it's just, who's spending 8 till 10 on a Saturday night watching that?
Well, about 400,000 people. I mean, at most, like 500,000. And like, it's all your competition through the TV, isn't it? It's Amazon Prime or Netflix or Disney or Paramount or WWE Network or, you know, sports, or there's so much competition if you just sat there in the living room in front of your TV. Mm. So never mind leaving the house. But you're right, yeah, Collision, sometimes you watch it and you just think, what did they achieve in those 2 hours? Like almost nothing, or in some weeks, nothing at all. And you're like, well, why? This is 2 hours of like, you know, prime time, national, you know, right, international TV. You could do so much more with it than you are. And it's very frustrating watching Collision. It really is.
You feel you're wasting your time. And for us, like we kind of have to keep up with it. Because if we don't, then we don't really know what we're talking about. You know, so it's an annoyance that we kind of have to keep up with it a bit because it's useless. So with Impact, you know, with the TNA Impact show, they've got a chance at the moment to get some viewers. Maybe not double their audience, but I think there's scope to get people if they get people talking. So we'll see if they
definitely, absolutely. It's all about making it interesting. I think the production values are a big part of its appeal. I mean, there's a lot going on in TNA right now, and you know, I hope people will give it a chance and you know, maybe check it out again. And if you think it's worth watching, which it is, then you know, watch that instead of Collision or whatever promotions that not float in your boat anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's move on to Raw before we go. So we opened the show with Cody Rhodes coming out to do a promo. He gets interrupted by Drew McIntyre. So they can have this back and forth. They reminisce about being a tag team together, being the tag champs. They even referenced the last match they had together, which was actually in WCPW, and I was there.
April 30th, 2017 in Coventry.
Yeah. So I was there. That was my last day at WCPW.
Oh, was Coventry. It? Oh,
yeah,
wow.
That was... Not because of that match, but for various other reasons. So, yeah, I it's interesting.
What a coincidence that is, isn't it?
I know. If I ever write a book, some of the stuff I'd do something backstage that day for Drew, because something had been agreed upon that wasn't delivered, and I basically kind of told him I was going to have to go and kick up a fuss for him, and I got it fixed, and I think that was kind of what made him appreciate me, because I, you know, he was just about to go back to WWE and he needed to be taken care of, is the point, and he wasn't being. So, but I mean, that match was the last one he had with Cody, so they referenced that. And, you know, the whole story is they both want to go to WrestleMania and finish their story. I thought this was a pretty compelling segment, to be honest. And, you know, this year's WrestleMania, so many people who should be in featured matches, and obviously Cody's top of that list. And I mean, with Drew, it's like every week when he does a promo, I think, have you re-signed now? Because it feels like you have, because I just can't see why they would keep giving you all this time and putting you over so much if you've not. So I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but I really enjoyed the segment. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, Drew was allowed to bring up that he'd basically humbled CM Punk on the mic last week. I was like, wow, you know, and if that happened in AEW, there'd probably been another bust up. You know, someone would have been sent home for 6 months. But he did. He brought that up. And we talked about this last week that, you know, Drew definitely got the better of Punk in that segment, in that verbal showdown they had last week on Raw. And McIntyre was allowed to bring it up here, which I was kind of astounded by, really. And I'm pleased that he did. So, I mean, he said to Cody, you know, why, you know, it sounds like you swallowed a dictionary, stop using all these lengthy words and trying to pretend that you're someone you're not, stop smiling and wearing the suits. Come on, show us the real Cody. And he was like, well, this is the real Cody. And Cody said to Drew that, you know, he was bitter. You know, they also mentioned, of course, that they followed similar paths because Drew had been fired in 2014 and went on to the indie circuit, reinvented himself between 2014 and 2017 before he then returned to WWE. And obviously Cody left of his own volition in 2016, wasn't it, when Cody left? That's right, I think, 2016?
Yeah, he left in 2016 when they didn't really want to, you know, they didn't see him as more than Stardust.
Wasn't it? That, Stardust, wasn't it, at that point? He was going nowhere.
Yeah, and he'd famously wanted to go back to being Cody after Dusty died. He wanted to go back after that, and it just wasn't happening, so he left.
Yeah, so he left and did his thing on the indie circuit and was hugely around, you know, his big indie show, and then that led to the creation of AEW, and he was there from the beginning with them for 3 years. So, I mean, yeah, it was an interesting segment, really. They were weaving a lot of, mostly actually fact, with maybe a little bit of fiction in there, but mostly what they said was true. And I think people could relate to that, and people probably realised that what they were saying was all correct. And it was interesting that they brought up that last match that Drew had had on the independent circuit before he rejoined WWE. So that was mentioned. And then Cody's mic drop moment was, who won that match, Drew? You know, you bring the match up, but you didn't say who won. And then Cody left and Drew was there seething. You know, so Cody actually had the last laugh in the segment, didn't he?
Yes, he had the last laugh in the end. And it was a really good opening segment. And it's, I'm very into all the stuff that's going on right now. We also had, you know, R-Truth really, I mean, he's so funny. He's got Judgment Day merchandise that he's selling out in the parking lot. WWE are now selling a Tom and Nick Mysterio t-shirt with two photos of Dom on it. You know, Priest confronts him backstage and he sort of is trying to give Priest his cut of the cash for the t-shirts. And he's like, okay, keep doing it, but don't be loud about it. And very funny.
It was the fakest looking money I've ever seen.
It was. And then it led to the match later with The Miz and R-Truth against the tag champs. We got the match and it was a non-title match and the champs retained in the end. Obviously, the crowd were very unhappy that R-Truth was not successful here. But, I mean, he continues to be one of the highlights of the show.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in some ways, I was like, because I think we were talking about it last week. I was like, wow, you know, I was like, don't make them champs. He's like, no, I'm now on board, you know, with Miz and Truth. Make them champs, even if it's only briefly. And, yeah, I mean, it wasn't a title match. It was a non-title match. And it was like a comedy match here. And, you know, Damian Priest had said earlier when they were having a conversation backstage regarding the merch, he was like, don't tag into the match. And like, R-Truth thought he knew what he meant, but didn't actually know what he meant. And then Priest ended up nailing Truth with the South of Heaven choke slam, and Balor scored the pin, didn't he?
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see what Truth says next week on Raw, because he obviously was beaten up by Priest and pinned by Balor. So even in, you know, his confused state, he has to realise that that's some type of declaration of war here, and that Judgment Day really aren't his pals.
Yeah, I mean, it's so good. And I mean, I think there's scope for it to keep going and see kind of where it ends up. So I was pretty impressed in the show. We had a match with DIY against Dominic Mysterio and JD McDonagh, and I thought that this was a good showing for DIY. They kind of felt a little bit more like the old DIY here than they really have so far, I think, as a team on the main roster.
Yeah, it felt like they were given more creative control over what they could do in the match. There were some actual genuine old school heel tricks here, like the referee missed Ciampa's tag, and fans were really booing that. And there was a lot of, you know, really simple stuff here. And because people don't really do that so much anymore, at least not on national promotions, it works so well and will always work. Because, you know, this is what used to do back in the 70s and 80s when I first started watching wrestling. You know, referee, what are you doing? Pay attention, all that kind of thing. And, it felt like Gargano and Ciampa here really seemed like they were on fire and like they were really working together well rather than as two singles wrestlers who had been put together for one match. They seemed like a team here. And, you know, the idea, of course, was that Gargano and Ciampa would score the pin and that will lead them to a title match with Balor and Priest. I'm not sure if that's going to take place at Rumble. Nothing's been announced yet, has it? Probably won't take place at Rumble. Probably be a TV match. But I'm looking forward to that. So, McDonagh and Mysterio play a very important role as kind of like the Judgment Day's enhancement talent, don't they?
Yeah, and you're right, though. They are a key part of it because they're kind of the guys who can take the losses for the team.
Yeah.
And because before, if this was like under Vince, Balor would probably be taking some losses because they might not have let JD go in the group. In fact, under Vince, I don't think they would have let him in the group. I think this is more, you know, Triple H dealt with NXT UK. He knows McDonagh. And, you know, props to him for seeing a role that we did not see for him. We didn't see it, and he's doing really well, McDonagh. So props to him for keeping up.
Absolutely. I mean, he's having mic time. He's in, like, he was in this match, and they had a really good match here. You know, McDonagh and Mysterio are really good as a team. I really hope they become tag champs. You know, whoever beats Balor and Priest, you know, okay, that was a big match when that happens, and hopefully they'll drop the belts, maybe WrestleMania. I think that would be the perfect place for Balor and Priest to drop the belts, and then they could do some sort of, if they're doing a split, they can do something big on Raw the next night or two nights later. And I'd like to see, you know, McDonagh and Mysterio become tag champs at some point this year. I think they could do well with belts, and I think that would be, I think I've already said this, I think that would be, you know, they'd be very deserving. That would be a, you know, just reward for the good work that they have been doing lately, preparing people for Balor and Priest.
Elsewhere on the show, we had Indy Hartwell and Candice LeRae, who obviously had been on the same team anyway. They're now basically being pushed as a team. They got a run over Chelsea Green, Piper Niven here. They got a little kind of package on them as well, footage from earlier in the day. So they seem to be adding them as a team in, and you know, it gives them something to do. So we'll see if it comes to anything.
But the match was a disaster. I mean, it was just terrible. It just looked awful. And then
it was only 3 minutes as well.
So bad. It's just so bad. Chelsea versus Indy. It looked like they didn't know what the hell they were doing. Like they hadn't even been trained. And then after the match, Hartwell just fell over in the ring. I mean, what was going on there, Kenny?
Maybe she was pissed, you know? Maybe she had a couple of cocktails before she went out.
What I also thought was odd was Indy Hartwell and Candice LeRae have heel music. Not a babyface entrance tune. That's a heel entrance tune.
Yeah, they need to fix that. Speaking of heels, we got the return of Gunther on the show. He came out with, you know, Ludwig by his side. And, you know, he's talked about Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. And he said last year, you know, he lasted longer in the Rumble than anyone else. So this year he's going to win it. And then he said that, you know, Giovanni Vinci's injured now and Kaiser got some revenge by injuring Kofi. Then Xavier Woods comes out and that leads us to Woods versus Kaiser, which Kaiser wins. And then afterwards we had
Woods was disqualified for nailing Kaiser with a swivel chair.
Yes, he was disqualified, so that allowed Woods to kind of go after Kaiser. But then Kaiser ended up getting the upper hand, and he ended up putting the ring steps over Xavier, and he tried to go and hit him with it, but Woods got away, hit a standing double stomp, and then picked up the ring steps, threw them at Kaiser, who missed it, and then he kind of hopped the barricade and left. So, I mean, this was a serious moment for Xavier Woods, which we rarely get. And I think if the New Day are going to continue, Woods and Kofi, they need a makeover. I mean, stale is not the word for that act. And I mean, here it was nice to see. It was, seeing Xavier do something a bit more serious was nice because we're so used to the kind of buffoon that he is.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And Ludwig Kaiser, as we said last week, got, you know, provoked genuine heat when he beat down Kofi. I mean, people were really angry about that. It wasn't like, ha ha ha, isn't this hilarious? It was like, no, we're really mad because that guy's beating up our favourite. You know, and that's, you know, and that's quite a trick because you said Kofi, even though, you know, he's still talented and can still go, still knows what to do, he's been playing this character for so long that he's like the wallpaper, isn't he? He's, you know, he's like the ring canvas. He's like, you know, and you're right. I mean, Xavier Woods here was serious and he was allowed, you know, to salvage some dignity here by running Kaiser off as well. He should have done because obviously Kaiser had, you know, injured in the storyline his tag team partner the previous week. So I thought that was well done. I liked as well backstage. Kaiser attacked Woods backstage and then it was Jay who saved Woods from the post-match attack. And I'm hoping that's going to lead to a Gunther versus Jay IC title match because Jay had mentioned in that an interview that I covered in the last issue of the magazine that he aspired to hold the Intercontinental title one day. So I think that could be a really good program for Gunther and for Jay, actually.
Yeah, and so yeah, and I think it'd be a good program, and he gives Gunther something to do before inevitably Brock Lesnar, who is due to return, sets up that match with Gunther at WrestleMania that we want. So
yeah, do we think that Lesnar's returning at Royal Rumble?
Yes, I would imagine so.
Okay,
I would imagine. Yeah, he's due to return at any time now. Is the story? So yeah, I mean, I'd imagine. And whatever he's going to do at Mania, you set it up at the Rumble because he's probably not going to Australia for Elimination Chamber, so
no, he's not Australia. We know that.
No, they're not paying for the fuel for his private jet to go to Australia.
Yeah, he'll go to Saudi because it's seven figures, but it's maybe not quite as much money for working in Australia.
We also got a segment with Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch, and because Rhea had come out and said that, you know, she's sick and tired of people like Nia Jax running down the division, saying this is my title. And Becky comes out. And it was kind of an interesting promo because Becky's kind of talking about how, you know, I need to prove that I'm the best and you're not. And I need to take that title from you. So I need to win the Royal Rumble. I need to, you know, go to WrestleMania. But it almost seemed that Rhea Ripley was more confident that Becky Lynch was going to face her at WrestleMania than Becky was.
Yeah.
And it feels like we're kind of telling this story of, I guess, Becky, after losing to Nia, she's lost a bit of her confidence. And that's the story.
Yeah, she showed some vulnerability here, which was an interesting twist for Becky Lynch, who normally comes across as, like, bulletproof, doesn't she?
Mrs. Like, Bravado.
No one can wound her emotionally. And, yeah, it's as if she was, you know, after the loss to Nia, it's like, you know, and she was saying that she believes that she and Rhea Ripley are the best in the biz, the best to do it, you know, but she said that she was afraid that Rhea Ripley was actually better than her and needed to win the Royal Rumble match so she could face Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania to prove that she was better than Rhea. And Rhea said, you know, there's only one person, you know, that wants you. What was the exact wording? Obviously, Becky is the one who wants to win the Rumble most, but the person who wants to win it the second most is Rhea. So Rhea wants Becky to win the Royal Rumble as well, so that we have that WrestleMania match. They, you know, they both want Becky to win the Rumble. And as just before she left, Rhea said to Lynch, "I'll see you at WrestleMania." So that was a bit odd for WWE because it's like they were telegraphing the outcome of the rest of the women's Royal Rumble match. Like, see, well, obviously Lynch is going to win, so that Lynch versus Ripley takes place at WrestleMania, which is a match that we've been talking about for months. I mean, it seems fairly obvious that it's going to be a WrestleMania match, but it's unusual for WWE to make it that obvious more than 2 months before the show.
Yeah, it was an odd choice, but I mean, it seems like they have a plan, they've got a story they're telling, and at least it's more interesting than just the usual run-of-the-mill paint-by-numbers build. So at least there's something. But it was all about Finn, the main event. It was all about Seth Rollins and Jinder Mahal for the World Heavyweight title, and they gave us all the smoke and mirrors here. They gave us a near fall where Seth got hit with a briefcase, and for a second, it seemed like Jinder was going to do it again. But luckily, he was not able to. Priest showed up with the briefcase, which caused... and then Drew McIntyre showed up and they started fighting. That caused Veer to distract the referee. And then we got the briefcase shot. But so
in the shower at ringside, weren't they? They were involved.
Oh, they were involved the whole time. They were up on the apron. They were doing everything they could. That, the two close near falls came from Indus Share getting up on the apron and kind of getting involved. And then in the end, Rollins was able to... because the referee ejected Indus Share. And then Mahal went for his finisher again, and Rollins rolled out of it, hit the stomp, and pinned Jinder. But when Rollins did the moonsault a few minutes before the end, he did seem to tweak his knee.
Yes.
And he seems to have injured himself. So the chat at the moment is that nobody knows if it's minor or major. He's going for an MRI this week, and it could be nothing, it could be something. You know, I hope for him it's nothing, because, you know, this is his first real short of main event in WrestleMania, which I know he's not done and he wants to do. So it'd be kind of heartbreaking for him for this to stop that, but hopefully it'll just be minor. But what did you make of the main event and how they booked it?
I don't think it's going to be a serious injury, because he was able to do a lot after the spot on which he suffered. He was grabbing his knee, and it almost felt like a storyline knee injury, didn't it? He was there milking it, wasn't he? He was letting us know that he was injured. And if this was like ACL tear, he wouldn't have been able to stand up. If it's something that's just relatively minor, he'll be put on light duties between, you know, now and April, because that WrestleMania match, he wants that too badly. We know CM Punk wants that match as well. We know WWE wants that match. So unless it's like full reconstructive surgery, I'm confident that Seth Rollins will be a big part of WrestleMania. But you're right. I mean, they just threw everything out this. They knew that Rollins and Mahal needed a lot of help out there. I thought they actually did well, you know, with all these sort of false finishes and all these extras. And, we knew, didn't we? Obviously, we knew that Rollins was going to win. But they had us go in there for a couple of times. And I think that's all you could realistically ask for from a match between, you know, two characters, you know, who are, you know, so far apart. You know, one's the very top of the star, you know, chart, or the star, you know, and the other one's at the very bottom. So it's, I thought they did well considering who was in the match. I mean, it's kind of outrageous, really. I mean, I agree with Tony Khan. It's outrageous that Jinder Mahal received a title match on Raw. This is a disgrace. I'm telling you. But no, I thought they made the best of what they had. And, you know, they used everything that was at their disposal, all the tools at their disposal to make this thing a success. And I think it was, in terms of, you know, as far as TV matches go. I mean, people aren't going to be talking about it probably 3 months from now, or maybe even 3 hours from now, Kenny. But I think it did keep the people entertained, and it did what it was supposed to do. And yes, let's just hope that the Rollins is not sidelined for 9 months as a result of it.
Yeah, don't know if it'd be worth it. Overall, given that Jinder, there's absolutely no chance you'd ever believe that he would be, you know, win the title. I thought they did a really good job of giving you some false finishes to worry you a little bit.
Yeah.
And they stacked the deck against Rollins enough within the share that it was believable that Jinder was able to get as far as he did. And, you know, I mean, it's a TV match. I mean, it is not worth... If you're somebody who's really offended that Jinder Mahal is in this position, then it was a TV match and it's over. There's nothing to get worried about. Just go outside and, you know, smell some grass. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
But we are not advocating smoking some grass. Just go out there and just smell the fresh air.
Yeah, smell the fresh air. We're not insinuating anything. But listen, that's all the time we've got for now. We'll be back on Thursday with Power Slam, where we'll talk about the latest happenings in wrestling that are outside of the ring. But lots of stuff going on. We're only on the third week of January now, and there's already been loads happen. So it feels like 2024 is going to keep us on our toes, Finn. as always.
Oh, yes. Yes, yeah, yeah. There's, as you said earlier, there's so many people vying for big matches at WrestleMania. And if you think a lot of WrestleManias in the past where you thought, oh, no, you know, it just feels like it's almost bereft of stars. Mm-hmm. This year, there's almost too many. And like anyone who thinks, oh, WrestleMania should go back to one night. Well, OK, if it was, if that were to happen, you know, can you imagine how many people wouldn't be on the show?
I know. It doesn't bear thinking about it. The two-night thing, I think it works pretty well. And look, you know, if you're a fan, you've basically got wrestling for a whole weekend. So,
absolutely.
Listen, a few quick plugs before we go. Power Slam, the first yearbook, 1994, is available. We've got limited quantity left, so please do go to powerslammagazine.com and pick yours up. There are still a fair few available, but, you know, this time next year, there probably won't be. So I would make sure that you go and pick one up while you can at powerslammagazine.com. And then also insidetheropesmagazine.com is where you can go and pre-order issue 41 with The Rock on the cover. Loads of stuff in there. Finn kind of goes through the Rock's return. I interview Eddie Kingston. Finn does the Alternative Year Awards. There's loads of stuff in there, so do go check that out as well. And finally, patreon.com/insidetheropes is where we do bonus podcasts. An overrun where we do either questions or look at old issues of Power Slam. Sondra and I do retro reviews of Raw and SmackDown. There's loads of stuff. And next week we'll be reviewing probably the 2004 Royal Rumble. So,
indeed. And we're going to, later this month, Kenny, we're going to review the famous Kerry Von Erich versus Ric Flair cage match from World Class, December 25th, 1982.
There you go. We'll be doing that as well.
Month, so
plenty of stuff
going up on Patreon very soon as well, Kenny.
Yes, and Q&A as well. So yeah, head over there if you want to get a bit more content from us, or do you just want to support the stuff that we do. So thank you for all your support as always, and we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.